Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The battle of belligerents is once again the story of Mideast conflict. Israel is squeezing the Palestinian leader into an ever smaller compound. Israel says it wants some of the men who are sequestered inside with Arafat. Others regard the tactic as straight-ahead punishment for the Palestinian leader, regardless of his role in recent suicide bombings. Looking out from inside, Arafat sees his own popularity rising once again. There is a numbing familiarity to it all. This hour, we will talk about what it might mean to that standoff and the larger question of Mideast peace. If the USA actually goes to war with Iraq, some say it's exactly what Israel wants. Some say the benefits would fall on the Palestinian side. Connection listeners, if Bush presses ahead with an attack against Baghdad, what changes in Gaza, Jerusalem, Tel Aviv, and Ramallah? Our number's 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us on the program today from Washington is Judith Kipper. She directs Middle East programs for both the Council on Foreign Relations and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. We're also joined by Dr. Mustafa Barghouti. He is president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees. He's on the phone from Ramallah. And on the line from Tel Aviv is Zev Schiff. He's a military analyst for the daily Israeli newspaper Haaretz. We're going to go first, though, for an update on the latest news to Barbara Plett, who's standing by in Ramallah. Barbara's a BBC Middle East correspondent. Hi, Barbara.
Hi, Dick.
Any changes in Ramallah today?
Not at the moment. The compound is quiet. We did have a statement from Nabil Abu Rudaina, who is an advisor with Mr. Arafat. He said that the Palestinian position was holding firm, that is, that was not going to agree to Israeli terms on how to end the siege. The Israelis are demanding the handover of some 50 wanted men from inside the compound. The Palestinians have rejected that, and they say that they are going to stick to the UN resolution as their basis, which has asked for a withdrawal from the compound, an end to the siege, and also an Israeli withdrawal from occupied cities.
And news from Gaza from overnight, the Israeli army incursion there. I guess that's also something that people are watching quite closely.
Yes, that's right. The Israelis made quite a big incursion into Khan Yunis, which is a town and refugee camp in the center of Gaza Strip. They destroyed a number of houses and workshops there, workshops they said were used for making weapons. 9 people killed. There was a fierce gun battle. But there have been quite a lot of incursions in Gaza over the past couple of weeks, and it looks as if the Israelis are turning their attention more to it. The Prime Minister has just said, we have not finished our job in Gaza, and it looks like we will operate there to strike at Hamas once we've concentrated the appropriate troops. And that would certainly answer some questions that some Israelis are asking. They're asking, why are we going after Yasser Arafat when it's clear that these suicide bombings are being carried out by Hamas, and Hamas is not listening to Mr. Arafat, and he has no control over them anyway.
And Barbara, in the conversation, does Iraq come up? Is there enough basically on people's plates not to bother trying to speculate on what might happen months ahead? Or is that a part of the conversation, the USA and Iraq?
Well, I don't know if it's so much a part of the conversation on the ground at the moment because events are moving, but it certainly is in everybody's mind. I think from my observations, I can say two things. There are definitely elements within the Israeli government who really want this war because they think it's going to change the power, the balance of power in the Middle East. And it's going to also be approached from an Israeli point of view, which is that the violence in the Middle East is because of terrorism. It's not because of the Arab-Israeli conflict. If you remember when the American-led coalition went into Iraq about 10 years ago, it was because the Iraqis had invaded an Arab state. They had upset the Arab status quo, and the coalition came in to reinstate that status quo. That's not the issue now. The Arab order isn't really under consideration. The Arab-Israeli conflict is not the issue. It's what the United States and the Israelis call terrorism. From the Palestinian point of view, I think what we can expect to see is that Hamas, which has been greatly weakened, been greatly strengthened, pardon me, by the Israeli assault on Yasser Arafat, has been starting to take the lead in anti-American demonstrations with regards to Iraq. It's Hamas who's out front and center at this point. It's making connections between the Palestinian situation and the Iraqi situation. It's saying that the Israeli siege or closures of the Palestinian territories is just like the American siege on Iraq, and that it is the same. It's an imperial policy to impose an imperial will. So I think we can expect to see quite a bit of activity or attempted activity in the territories if there is a war in Iraq, and I think we can expect to see Hamas leading it.
Barbara, thanks for your insight. Barbara Plett, BBC Middle East correspondent, joining us on the line from Ramallah. Let's go to Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, who I mentioned earlier, is president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees. He's also on the phone in Ramallah. Dr. Barghouti, the news from Ramallah, the news from Gaza, we read it in the newspaper. You live it every day. Are, as I said to Barbara, are people there speculating about Iraq at this point?
Not really. I think most people, all people actually, are concerned about what's happening to us. And let me draw to you a very quick picture about the situation. We have here a whole population, all the cities of the West Bank, are under curfew for almost 95 days nonstop, 24 hours a day. People are unable to leave their homes. They cannot go to their jobs. They cannot go. Students are unable to go to schools. Children are unable to receive vaccination. Women have great difficulty reaching the hospitals to deliver their babies. We lost so many lives because people are unable to receive medical treatment. A whole population is under siege and closure. You can talk about a situation of people being imprisoned. A whole population is under prison. And that's why there is now a huge, massive, popular uprising. People are turning to nonviolent, peaceful struggle, which is a great thing. People are challenging the curfew. They are defying it. And they're saying we cannot take it anymore. I think that's what people are most concerned with, in addition, of course, to Israeli attacks on Gaza, which promise, as it seems clear, that Israel is probably planning to reinvade Gaza and reoccupy it completely, as they've done with the West Bank.
So when people are looking for some change, some break, do they look at an American attack on Iraq as anything that will alter the current circumstances?
Not really, because we have had this experience before. Back in 1991, we were promised that after the attack on Iraq and after the war there, the Palestinian question will be resolved. And what we've seen then is what we see now, double standards. From one side, there is a great pressure on Iraq to implement UN resolutions and to abide by them. There is nothing wrong with doing that. But the question is, why the same approach is not used against Israel? Why the double standard? The most recent United Nations resolution, Security Council resolution, was rejected by Israel. Israel has already refused and is violating no less than two dozens of UN resolutions and Security Council resolutions. So the question is, why there is a double standard? So I don't think Palestinians believe the story that if Iraq is attacked and if there is aggression there, then their problem will be resolved. I think Palestinians are very careful also about, which is that they don't want themselves to be trapped in anybody else's problem. I think the Israelis have been trying to trap us in the Afghani problem and global terrorism and 11th of September and now the issue of Iraq. We are concerned about one issue: the Israeli occupation of Palestine, the fact that we do not have freedom of movement, the fact that we are oppressed, the fact that so many Palestinians have been killed and injured, the fact that we need justice and we need freedom.
Dr. Barghouti, I want to try and get to my other guests. We will, of course, return to you in the course of the hour. Zev Schiff, you are in Tel Aviv. This is a story you also live day to day, though Dr. Barghouti talks about the nonviolent protests. There are suicide bombs. There are confrontations. Palestinians are being shot at demonstrations. Is there space in that for what happens in an American attack on Iraq?
Thank you for mentioning the fact that there are suicide bombing here, because until a moment ago I thought that I'm somewhere in the planet in space, because I'm not going back to 100 years ago when the conflict had started, but just a week ago to the center of Tel Aviv, to the fact that another bus was bombed by a suicide bomber, killing six people, killing an elderly man of 80 years, two old ladies, and so on. So here the story started with the last round. I mean, it didn't start with the Mukata, where Arafat's headquarters is located. It started in Tel Aviv. And no government, no state in the world will tolerate something like this. Neither the Americans, nor the Germans, nor the Egypt, no one will accept the fact that buses are exploded in the center of the major cities, period. I mean, from now on, you can say we did it wrong, or we did it, we reacted in a good way or in a bad way, but the fact is that we shall not tolerate, I think we don't have to tolerate the explosion of buses. We can discuss it, we have to negotiate the political solution, but this is something which I'm really shocked that it was not mentioned before, neither by Mr. Balgotti and not by the lady from Ramallah. Now, you asked me...
Mr. Schiff, you're not talking about Iraq. I wonder if you can turn your attention to that.
No, I'm moving now to Iraq, but what bothers me is the explosions of buses. Now, Iraq, if the Americans will win in Iraq, I really hope that a new page, not just for Iraq, but for the Middle East, will be open, because it will give us a chance to restart the regional negotiations, including Israelis and the Palestinians, and to move to the political track. This is a chance. If the Americans will lose the war in one way or another, then, God forbid, then it's a nightmare which will happen here in the Middle East, not just in Iraq, but it will affect the Iranians, it will affect the Hezbollah and others as well. So there is a direct connection. We just saw in Khan Yunis, where the Israelis were involved yesterday. I mean, by the way, the operation just stopped after 5 hours in Khan Yunis. Huge demonstrations by the Palestinians supporting Saddam Hussein, just as it happened in 1991 when Arafat promised to be within the same trenches with Saddam Hussein. In the end, then, let me remind you that the Palestinians were expelled from Kuwait, and they had a real rift with the Saudis and so on. Now, we hope that the Iraqis will not intervene here in order to inflame once again the Palestinian intifada and to bring both sides to another clash.
Judith Kipper at the Middle East Program for both the Council on Foreign Relations and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. I'm going to pose a question to you. We're going to take a short break. I'll come back and we'll begin with you, because we're rapidly burning through the time that we have in the program. But Judith,
yes.
Is my premise wrong here? Should we be talking about the effect of a potential war in Iraq with people who are living the sort of conflict that we're listening to Zev Schiff describe, that we're listening to Dr. Barghouti describe, both in Tel Aviv and Ramallah? And when we come back after the break, I want you to tell me whether or not we're talking about the wrong thing on the program today. Our number's 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, do these conversations overlap, or is it impossible to talk about the potential for one conflict while another one is currently underway? 1-800-423-TALK. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WB.
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. This hour we're talking about all the speculation of an American attack against Baghdad and what that might mean for the current conflict in the Middle East. We have with us on the program Zev Schiff, a military analyst for the daily Israeli newspaper Haaretz, and Dr. Mustafa Barghouti, president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees, and Judith Kipper, who has been very patient waiting for us. She is on the phone from the Council on Foreign Relations, Middle East, where she heads up the Middle East programs there. Judith, should we be talking about Iraq at a time when the people who are in the region seem to think that it's kind of hard to turn attention in that direction?
Well, of course, we have to talk about Iraq, but for the Israelis and the Palestinians, Iraq is not the issue. These two peoples are locked into a dance of death, a downward spiral where lives are being lost for absolutely nothing. And both are perfect victims for each other. Both have punished themselves and each other in an unbearable way. And unfortunately, neither the leadership of both sides is not capable of moving forward toward peace. Neither Arafat nor Sharon are statesmen. Both have chosen force over diplomacy their entire careers. Neither has presented a real vision for the future that would enable their peoples, Israelis and Palestinians, to live in peace and prosperity. Neither is magnanimous, and there is a hideous personal feud between the two of them. And more importantly, perhaps, than even the leadership, is tragically, horrifically, is that both peoples are able to tolerate the level of violence. You do not see, until very recently, Palestinian mothers and Israeli mothers marching in the streets to demand something different, to stop killing their children, to demand something from their governments. So for Israelis and Palestinians, they have yet to make the choice. They don't have the leaders to help them make that choice to end the conflict.
Is it reasonable, Judith, to add the United States leadership to the list of leaders who aren't providing the measure of leadership that shows a way out? Hence the idea or the speculation, maybe an attack on Iraq changes the relationships enough in the entire region to readdress that.
Yes, of course. The Israelis and Palestinians can't. It's an existential problem for both of them. They both perceive that their very identity and their survival is at stake, and they cannot deal with the concessions and final status issues without the direct, active, proactive intervention of the United States. And clearly, while President Clinton achieved quite a lot, his team was largely tactical, and in the end, they failed. President Bush has decided he really wants nothing to do with this conflict, and has tried from time to time just to quiet it down and to keep it at a tolerable level while concentrating on the war on terrorism and now Iraq. So clearly, the role of the United States is absolutely critical for both the Palestinians and the Israelis to be able to let go of being victims and to move forward together into a better future. And this is not psychobabble. It is two deeply traumatized peoples who cannot make the final steps by themselves. And it's incumbent upon the United States to provide the leadership that will help them to get there. And the documents have already are there. The agreements are there. There are plenty of previously agreed negotiations that can be put on the table, but they need to be brought together in a document by the United States. But unfortunately, that's not going to happen. And getting rid of Saddam Hussein, I don't think, is going to change that dynamic very much.
Mustafa Barghouti, what Judith says, you know, is being borne out in the news. There's no talk of a return of Zinni or of Powell coming to mediate the latest fighting that's going on in the Middle East. But I wonder if I can turn your attention to something that Zev Schiff mentioned, and that is that that there will be a Palestinian street-level reaction that supports Saddam Hussein simply because the man stands as a symbol of anti-Israeli attitude. He stands as a symbol of someone who thumbs his nose at the United States. The dilemma, it seems to me, is what happens to the Palestinian leadership? They're in trouble. Go ahead. I was just going to say, it seems to me they'd be in trouble if they embraced that.
Well, you see, Mr. Zev Schiff is a highly respected, honorable professional, and I think he should stick to the standards he has achieved. When he says that there has been a demonstration now in support of Saddam Hussein, he's simply repeating a lie. There has been, Palestinians are demonstrating against curfew. They're demonstrating against the closures. They're demonstrating against the Israeli tanks that are occupying all our...
And there are no signs, no slogans of support
whatsoever.
For Saddam Hussein
in that. I think he is, the Israeli propaganda is already preparing the ground to make Palestinians look like supporters of Saddam.
Okay, now wait a second.
We have nothing to do with Saddam.
But and they do
the,
support
doctor,
Saddam Hussein. They have in the past. They did in the last Gulf War.
Not really. There is a great misperception. I personally remember in 1991 standing in the UN in Geneva and saying, we, the people who have been under occupation all our lives, we cannot support any occupation of any other country, especially the one that is coming from Saddam against Kuwait.
And I stood in the streets of Amman, Jordan, with thousands of Palestinians around me cheering
Saddam
Hussein.
Yeah, but Jordan was not attacked for that. Why Palestinians only were attacked? You see, I believe here there is a misperception. The cause of all violence in this region, and as a medical doctor, I want to tell you something. The worst thing that can be done to a patient is to concentrate on his symptoms rather than his disease. The cause of suffering of Palestinians and Israelis, the cause of violence has been the occupation, the Israeli military occupation, the denial of the Palestinian people for more than 60 years now, their right for self-determination to be free and to live in a country of their own. And if Israel resolves its problems with Palestinians, then it can have the best security in the world. There is a way out of this mess for both Palestinians and Israelis, and that is to treat this cancer, the occupation, that has become the disease that is taking the lives of both people on both sides.
Let me turn to Zev Schiff with that specifically, because if there is any consistency in the message that we hear from people who act as spokespeople for the Palestinian cause, Mr. Schiff, it is that we're simply talking about an end to the occupation that Dr. Bargoti is describing, and that nothing that will happen in or around Baghdad appears to be something that will change that.
Listen, at first let me just answer briefly about the first point. I saw on the television 2 weeks ago in Khan Yunis demonstrations with photos of Saddam Hussein. Maybe I'm completely wrong, and this was not Saddam Hussein. This was maybe George W. Bush. But and they shouted Saddam Ya Habib, hit Tel Aviv. In any case, I should be very glad to understand and to hear that nothing of this kind will happen again, especially because Saddam Hussein calls for the elimination of the Jewish state. Now, occupation. Dr. Bargoti is right. We have to reach the end of the occupation. We have to negotiate how to end it, exactly as we tried to do it in Camp David. Let me just remind Dr. Bargoti and all of us that after the Oslo Agreement was signed in Washington on the White House lawn, just a short time later on, during Rabin's period, there were a number of suicide bombing, and people were killed. Once again, in Tel Aviv. So it is not just only occupation. The chance was given to end occupation. We added some problems there, yes, with the settlement, and then I see it as part of the occupation. But this is a chance. I mean, Sharon and Arafat, I don't see them able to reach an understanding. I don't see them able to reach an agreement. But if there is a chance, before or after, I think it will be after the war on Iraq, then let us end occupation, providing that the Palestinian side will accept the fact that the Jewish state has to stay put and survive. This is a one precondition, which means that they don't have to plan to send their people, the refugees, which has to be resettled in Palestine, that they have to send their people to live in Israel. If it's so bad in Israel, why to send their people to live here? Then there's a good chance for a new understanding, new negotiations, providing that the Americans will jump in as the leaders, despite the fact that President Clinton failed in Camp David with Barack and with Arafat.
Mr. Schiff, we got a number of Americans who want to jump in on the phone, so let's turn there if we can. We're at 1-800-423-8255. David's on the line in Newton, Massachusetts. Hi, David.
Hi. I'd like to make two points. My understanding is the show is directed towards the relationship between the Iraq situation and Israel and the Arab Palestinian thing.
What or if anything will change if the Americans attack Iraq?
Right. I'll skip reactions to Judith Tipper's and Barghouti's remarks. There are two interrelationships that I see. One is, and both are speculative, but both are based on at least some facts. One is, it doesn't surprise me that when the world's attention was directed towards Iraq and the impending matter in the UN, that suicide attacks began again. It seems to me Iraq may be encouraging these things as a way to draw attention away from Iraq and back to the Arab-Palestinian, the Israeli-Palestinian problem. The second interrelationship I see is the following. There was a remarkable article about 8 or 9 months ago in The New Yorker by Jeffrey Goldberg about Saddam's use of chemical and biological weapons against the Kurds and to some extent against the Shias. And the conclusion of the article was that these were simply experiments directed towards the use of these weapons against Israel. If so, then Israel has to act at some point, similar to what it did in 1981 against the nuclear reactor. Israel itself can't afford to react to something that Iraq does. It has to proact at some point as Hussein perfects these various weapons. That would lead the whole region into a vast conflagration.
And so you're saying an American attack is a way of...
going in is to preclude that. That is, it's better for the U.S. to do it than for Israel to try to do it, because the consequences of the U.S. doing it are less than if Israel does it.
Is Judith Kipper, the United States, acting either consciously or unconsciously as a proxy in this case?
No, I don't think the United States is acting as a proxy at all. The United States is acting in its own interests, and as this particular administration perceives them. Obviously, when the U.S. acts, it has to consider our allies and consequences and so on, but it's not a proxy for anybody.
David, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
1-800-423-8255. Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Othman is on the line. Hi, Othman.
Hi. One of the things I wanted to mention, I think the reason there is anger is not that there's a support of Saddam Hussein. I think Saddam Hussein is known to be a brutal dictator. But it's the double standards of the U.S. government. We're telling Iraq, if you don't comply with U.N. resolutions, we will impose sanctions on you. We will use force against you. Israel does it blatantly. Many U.N. resolutions, including resolutions to end the occupation, to allow Palestinians to return, they have nuclear weapons, chemical, biological weapons. They don't allow inspections there. And in fact, we continue to offer them support, whether it's military or economic. And
Israel hardly has the sort of record that Saddam Hussein has with those weapons, though, in fairness.
I would disagree with you. In 1982, they went into Lebanon. Tens of thousands of people were killed. They're occupying Palestinian territory.
I'm talking about the weapons of mass destruction. I'm not talking about incursions.
But the Palestinians, though, who are living under occupation, will tell you that it is terrible, that, you know, decades of occupation is a terrible thing. And why aren't we ending that? Or are the Palestinians less human than others in the region?
Zev Schiff, how is the circle squared in Israel? A couple of people have mentioned on the program today the list of UN resolutions that remain unanswered both by Israel and by Iraq.
You see, at first I didn't hear that the Israelis poisoned with gas their Arabs in Israel, or they used chemical weapons against the Iranians. This is something which we have to keep in mind. I mean, incursions, yes, there were incursions, there were retaliations, and there were attacks, terror attacks against Israel and so on.
I'm interested in the UN resolutions. UN, Bush no. is saying they UN, must be obeyed.
It depends what kind of resolutions. But if you mention the UN resolutions, let us start from the very beginning. The fact that someone, and this is not the Israeli side, said in 1947, when the decision was to divide Palestine to two parts, to Israel and a Palestinian state, the Arab side said, no, no way. We are going to destroy the Jewish state. So this is the beginning. This was the first, undermining a UN resolution. And this is something which people tend to forget. I mean, now they want to change, to bring the historical clock backward. This is the beginning of the beginning.
Is that Israel's excuse then for violating resolutions and the Fourth Geneva Conventions and everything else? Should we say that there should be no laws? No state should follow any laws, and Israel should be exempt because of something that happened 50 years ago?
But keep in mind that if a resolution says that Israel has to accept the Palestinian refugees, and it means overwhelming Israel, and no Jewish state will exist, we cannot accept this just because the UN is controlled by the Arabs and other pro-Arab groups. Let me finish, please. But the Arabs have to accept one fact, that the way to solve it is exactly as it was decided in Oslo Agreement. Let us do it not by force. This was the letters which were exchanged by Rabin and Arafat. Let us do it in negotiations. And if you are using force, we shall not give in. And if you are using terror, I personally want a solution to this, but they will use force and terror, we cannot give in. We are ready to give in. We have to compromise. We have to accept the fact that the Palestinians have the right for their own self-determination, a Palestinian state, but the same goes for Israel. The same goes for the Jewish state, period.
Othman, thanks a lot for your call. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'll pick this up when we come back after our break this hour. Connection listeners, we're talking about the current conflict in the Middle East, the latest news, the past 6 months, the past 2 years, the past 50 years, and whether or not what could be ahead with an American attack on Iraq is likely to change that in any dramatic way, to be used or exploited by either side. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. My name is Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by Bicon Dental Implants, providing patients a sensible...
You're listening to The Connection from National Public Radio. My name's Dick Gordon. With me on the program today, Judith Kipper, Director of Middle East Programs for both the Council on Foreign Relations and the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Zev Schiff is a military analyst for the daily Israeli newspaper Haaretz. And Mustafa Barghouti is with us. He's president of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees. We have a number of people waiting on the phone. But Dr. Barghouti, you wanted to just come in on the issue of UN resolutions. Can I ask you to be brief so we can get back to our lines?
Sure. Well, it is amazing that Mr. Sheev is going back to 1947 to justify that Israel is rejecting now the implementation of UN resolution that was made yesterday. The question is why Israel allows itself to refuse all these resolutions. And the question is here, who is undermining negotiations? We have accepted the presence of Israel. We recognize Israel. And the Oslo Accord spoke about recognition of Israeli right to exist. We accepted to less than what was proposed to us in 1947, which is a state over 22% of historic Palestine instead of 45%. So what's the problem? Who built settlements? Who undermined the implementation of the agreement? Who rejected the implementation of the agreement? Sharon, who is in power now, is the only Israeli leader who rejected the agreement with Jordan, the agreement with Egypt, Y River Agreement, which was signed by Netanyahu, and Oslo Agreement, and managed to kill Oslo Agreement. So who is destroying the prospect for peace here? I think on our side, we are ready for peace. We have made our conclusion. But settlements, what justifies the creation of 47 new settlements during the last year alone? How could we have peace if settlements continue to be built? And let me just finally say one thing. Death is death. As a doctor also, I want to tell you, when somebody is killed, he is killed, whether he is killed in a suicide bombing or with an F-16 jet fighter. The fact that Israel has killed 1,890 Palestinians with sophisticated military weapons does not make this killing justified, as much as I don't agree with the death of 650 Israelis. The issue here is to accept each other and to accept that Palestinians are equal human beings and they are entitled to what Israelis are entitled to.
Judith Kipper, is it a mistake?
Their freedom, their justice, and their security.
Judith Kipper, is it a mistake to get caught up in an understanding or an attempt to try and understand when one country can and when another country cannot accept a UN resolution?
Yes, I think it is. I think that the historians and the psychologists will have enough time to work out the blame and the historical facts and the victimization, because if the Israelis and the Palestinians continue to point fingers and to blame rather than take responsibility for the tragedy in which each side finds itself and the bloodbath that each side finds itself, they will make no progress. And this is the dilemma. This is why American intervention is necessary. And unfortunately, American intervention at this stage is not there. It's not likely to come. And the question of a military action in Iraq over the next several months is going to further complicate the issue, and the consequences of it not going well in a few days, a war that would only take less than a week, are could be catastrophic throughout the region and be devastating, further devastating for Israelis and Palestinians who are locked in this dance of death with each other.
To Buffalo, New York. John's waiting on the line. John?
Hi. You know, typical of the left, and I don't mean to be pigeonholing anyone, but it's always a policy of appeasement. I want to know if during the reign of Hitler, you know, when we had pushed him back into
Who's
Germany,
the left we're talking about here, John? I just want to make sure I'm following you.
My point is that everyone's talking about appeasement. And the lady that had just spoken, all things being constant and equal in the Middle East, one thing is constant. The rule of Yasser Arafat. He has led those people for years. He was terrorizing people in the 60s. Now all of a sudden he has sworn the death of the Jews. Now all of a sudden he's changed his mind. He's claiming now he has no control over his people. He has absolutely no police force whatsoever. There is anarchy there. It's purported he has $1 billion stashed away in some bank, and I don't think it's because of his job skills. So, you know,
John, come to the point here.
Well, I think that Israel has every right to defend itself, just like the United States has every right to defend itself. And, you know, Europe, what have they ever done in their own defense? We had to bail them out of two world wars, and I hate to be this ugly American, but the facts are the facts. And you, to let history repeat itself, and it's always amazing that this one lady is making a moral equivocacy between Ariel Sharon and Yasser Arafat. The Israeli people at least have the opportunity to get rid of Ariel Sharon if they don't like what he's doing. But apparently he's doing right now.
Mustafa Barghouti, the Palestinian people were making an attempt to deal with Arafat. What happened to that?
Yeah, of course. There was a meeting in the Legislative Council. For the first time, Mr. Arafat had to have his cabinet resign, and he was obliged to take several serious reforms. And we are impatiently waiting for the opportunity of having free democratic elections in January. The decree was issued about that. But who is preventing that? At this moment, it's the Israeli tanks. Who is preventing reform? At this moment, it's the Israeli invasion. Who is blocking the possibility of making any democratic change in Palestine? At this moment, it is the Israeli occupation. So I know that the Israelis would like to look like the victims in this conflict, but the truth and the sad reality is that regardless of how sorry I feel for the death of so many Israelis and Palestinians at the same time, the truth in this case is that Israel is the mighty Goliath against the Palestinian weakness.
Zev Schiff, Perhaps you can just come in on here. We may have lost a line there. We're going to just check that.
No, I hear you.
Okay. Zeb Schiff, I know that there is a debate in Israel right now about whether or not the pressure on Arafat is directed in the right direction, whether or not Israel should be turning its attention to Hamas, which is claiming responsibility for suicide bombs. Has John put his finger on something, though, by saying, stick with Arafat? Arafat's the issue.
You see, the point is that one has to remember what was the agreement, the Oslo A agreement, the first agreement, which says clearly that the PLO has to take responsibility and to do everything to prevent terror from its territory, to bring them to court and to stop any terror. Now, you ask me personally, I don't accept the recommendation to go to Gaza and start attacking Gaza Strip just because the Hamas accepted the responsibility for the last attempt of the bombing of the bus in Tel Aviv. I think that we have to look for the Palestinian reforms. Dr. Barghouti is absolutely right. If they will move according to the line which President Bush suggested and others suggested for reforms, then elections will come, and we have to stick to this and wait and see what is going to happen. Among the reforms, there is something which is very important, that the security apparatus has to reorganize itself and stop the Hamas bombing Israel. If this will move, I hope and believe that we shall open a new page. The problem is not just Sharon. Let me remind you that they didn't like Barak. They kicked Barak out, actually. They hated Netanyahu. They didn't like Peres. And they were even against Rabin. Despite the fact that Rabin was in power, they started the bombing of buses in Tel Aviv and other places.
Judith Kipper,
so
every
prime minister in Israel is hated by them. But
excuse me, Zeb. I do want to move on here. Judith Kipper, John is saying you're an appeaser speaking from the left. Do you want to talk back to him?
Well, this kind of foolish rhetoric, I think, that isn't even worth the response. The point is that this conflict has long historic roots and there is a solution on the table. This conflict is not about Ariel Sharon and it is not about Yasser Arafat, who both peoples have the misfortune to have as their leaders at this moment. The conflict does have a solution. At the end of the Clinton administration, there's a Clinton document that both sides agreed to that will be put back on the table when the time comes and will be the framework for final status negotiations between the two. The Arab countries and the leadership of Crown Prince Abdullah have publicly committed themselves to full normalization, end of conflict, and regional security measures with Israel and the Palestinian state once they do their deal. And in the multilateral talks associated with Oslo, there were the beginnings of regional security agreements that should be part of any treaty between the Israelis and the Palestinians. So there's three elements. The deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians, which was done at the end of the Clinton administration, a schedule for normalization by the Arab states with the Israel and the Palestinian state, and the implementation of a regional security system. When the parties are ready to make peace, they can move in that direction and they can live and coexist together in peace and prosperity because they are more alike than they are different. They are not going to succeed by blaming, pointing fingers, going back to the past. It simply doesn't work.
Judith, let me ask you to turn your attention, though, to the message from the U.S. president. He's, in effect, if I'm paraphrasing him correctly, saying Iraq is not the end game. Iraq is the first step towards a democratization of the region that he's looking at. Can he be so confident that that will work?
Absolutely not. Democracy has to come from the grassroots. It has to be something that the people crave and want to build for themselves. And ironically, the Israelis have a democratic society. And one impact of the 35 years of occupation, perhaps the only positive impact, is that the Palestinians have been separated from the Arab disease of
one man show.
Judith, your phone is fading out there. Are you close to the mouthpiece there?
Yes, I am.
Sorry.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, go ahead.
The Palestinians are a people who crave democracy, who have had political parties for a long time, who have strong and important debate within their societies. And so one can see that the Palestinians ultimately will be a democracy alongside Israel. Other Arab states, we haven't seen that kind of movement for democracy. And clearly, in Iraq, we're not going to go from a Stalinist state directly to a Jeffersonian democracy. If we get a benign dictator who can help to rebuild the country and open up a deeply traumatized people, I think that that will be a good result.
Seb Schiff, Mustafa Barghouti, I've got a couple of minutes left in the program. I'd like to hear your thoughts, a minute apiece, if you wouldn't mind, just on whether or not this notion of imposing a form of democratization or hoping that one takes root, which the president is talking about, is something that you think can work. Seb Schiff first, please.
Yeah, if you speak about the democratization in Iraq after the war,
yes,
then I doubt it. I fully agree with Judith. You cannot just jump into the future and bring a democracy to Iraq. I think that they will need a sort of a military-controlled government at the first stage and move slowly and have representatives from all sections and all the minorities. And then there is a good chance that they will become quasi-democratic, but they have to give up certain other things, and then to be integrated, not just to the Middle East, but also to be one of the parties in the future regional peace conference.
Mustafa Barghouti.
Well, I am sorry to disagree with Judith Kipper. With all due respect, there isn't anything that can be called benign dictator. This is an absolute rubbish. And either there is a dictatorship or there is democracy. And I don't agree also with this racist perception that Arabs can never have democracies. I think Arabs can have democracy. They are ready to have democracy. The problem is that the people of the Arab world are oppressed by their governments, and many of the dictatorships there, the oppressive governments, are unfortunately and were supported by the United States for a long time. So time has come for democratization, and I believe that the only peace that will last in this region is the one between democracies, as experience has shown in Europe. The only lasting peace is the one that will be made between democracies. It's not in Israeli people interest. Maybe it is in the Israeli government interest not to have other democratic countries in the region so that Israel can continue to claim that it is the only democracy in the region. I believe in democracy. I think Palestinians will become democratic. The Arabs should become democratic.
Dr. Barghouti, I'm out of time.
That's the thing we are looking forward to.
I'm sorry I have to interrupt you. We're out of time for the program. Dr. Barghouti, President of the Union of Palestinian Medical Relief Committees. Thanks for your time. Judith Kipper, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Judith is Director of Middle East Programs for the Council on Foreign Relations, the Center for Strategic and International Studies. And Seb Schiff, thank you for your time.
And thank you for the moderation.
Seb Schiff, military analyst for the daily Israeli newspaper, Haaretz. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
Just ahead of the second.